This is Kathy returning with news from the Decatur area from the Pantograph and the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune for the 29th of September, which is a Tuesday. And there's one more article that is on the front page that I want to share with you. Shelby County Drug Court sees benefits. Court officials in Shelby County say a rehab program designed to help drug offenders avoid prison has had positive results, not just by reducing prison costs, but also for the offenders themselves. The county is participating in the state's drug court, a program funded through court fines that allows those facing sentences to the Illinois Department of Corrections for nonviolent drug crimes to avoid prison by completing a program of treatment, testing, counseling, and aftercare. Shelby County State's Attorney Gina Vonderhyde said the program is an offer to all drug offenders, but participants are selected by a county drug court board that includes judicial, mental health, probation, and legal representatives. These are people looking at serious prison time, she said. It's not a slap on the wrist for first offenders. We look at a person's situation and potential. Do they have the potential to be a working, tax-paying citizen supporting their families? Do they have a support system in place that will keep them from falling into their previous lifestyle? Participants complete a four-phase program including mental health treatment, 12-step programs, multiple weekly drug tests, and individual assignments. By completing steps, offenders can move into an aftercare program that includes standard probation department requirements. If it goes perfectly, the program takes up to 2 years to complete, Vonderhyde said. If the participant doesn't do the work, they go to prison. It's pretty simple. Since Shelby County joined the Illinois Drug Court program in 2012, fewer than a dozen people have been accepted. Vonderhyde said the first two graduates were facing 30 to 40 years in prison for methamphetamine production when they were offered the drug court alternative. They've been able to put their families back together and are tax-paying citizens with jobs, she said. We are looking for people who have the most to lose by going to prison and the most to gain by participating in the program, probation officer Heather Wooters said. If we continue to do things the way we have for the last 30 years, we will continue to get the same outcomes. But if we do things differently, we can get a different outcome. This is a good tool to do that. And one more. $1 million bond set in weekend teen shooting. Bond was set at $1 million Monday for the 17-year-old Decatur male who was arrested for allegedly shooting a 16-year-old male Saturday evening. Demarius D. Franklin, who was considered a juvenile under Illinois law, was automatically transferred to adult court on the felony charge of aggravated battery with a firearm. He is also being held on the charge of attempted first-degree murder. Franklin was arrested in connection with the shooting, which occurred about 6 p.m. Saturday on East Condit Street in the vicinity of Charles Street. The victim was found lying on the ground with a bullet wound to his chest area. The victim, who suffered life-threatening injuries, was transported to a Decatur hospital, then transferred to a St. Louis facility for specialized treatment. His condition today has not been released. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said that formal charges will be filed against Franklin possibly as early as Tuesday. Franklin is being held in the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center. And I think I'll start the obituaries a little bit early. I want to make sure I get them all in today. This first one is Jean Flashour, 86, of Clinton, passed away at 4:05 a.m. September 26th at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. No services are planned at this time. However, Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton assisted the family with cremation rites. Helen Hanauer, 104, of Taylorville, passed away Saturday, September 26th at Meadow Manor Skilled Nursing and Rehab Center in Taylorville. She was born on December 5th, 1910, in Raymond, Illinois. Funeral services for Helen will be held Thursday, October 1st, 2015, at 1 p.m. at the Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville, with Father Mariatis Chatla officiating. Burial will be in the Oak Hill Cemetery in Taylorville. Visitation will be Thursday, October 1st, from 11 to 1 at the Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society, Post Office Box 22718, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Teresa, also known as Joan Hobson Larimer, 85, of Decatur, formerly of Blue Mountain Parish, entered into eternal rest on September 27th. The Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Thursday, October 1st, at the Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Stonington, Illinois. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Blue Mound, with a rosary service at 7 p.m. An additional visitation will be held from 2:30 to 3 p.m. on Thursday at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Paris, Illinois. Joan will be laid to rest in St. Mary's Cemetery in Paris, Illinois. Donations may be made to the Holy Trinity Church Altar Society in Stonington, Illinois. Gary Lee Siebens, 74, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away Sunday, September 27th at 7 o'clock a.m. in his residence. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation on Thursday evening, October 1st, from 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. at the Dawson Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. The family request casual attire for services. A graveside service will be held in the Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the International Essential Tremor Foundation, Post Office Box 14005 in Lenexa, Kansas. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. Raymond L. Ray Sobotka, 79, of Decatur, from Ray Sobotka & Son Construction, owner and operator, died Friday, September 25th. Services will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday at the Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation is 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Private burial will be in the Lutheran Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Homeward Bound Pet Shelter. Dennis H. Weible, 64, died on September 21, 2015, in Puyallup, Washington. Family and friends are encouraged to share memories and condolences at www.widbaymemorial.com. A private family memorial service will be held. Just checking out the Decatur Tribune for possible articles. I think the City Beat information has been out there before, but I will read this again. Aldi requests to rezone southeast corner of Ash Avenue and U.S. 51 will be considered on October 19th. The Aldi request to rezone the parcels of land at the southeast corner of Ash Avenue and U.S. 51 so they can move forward with the proposed new Aldi grocery store is currently scheduled to be considered at the October 19th Decatur City Council meeting. The meeting will be held at 5:30 p.m. at the Decatur Civic Center. The Decatur Plan Commission gave its approval for the rezoning recently, and approval by the City Council is the final step in clearing the hurdles to move ahead with the project. There's been a lot of negative response from neighbors of the area who have a strong feeling against the project at that location due to an increase in traffic congestion. They have appeared before the Plan Commission and City Council to urge a no vote on the rezoning, and they are sure to be present at the meeting to again voice their concerns before the council takes the final vote. It will probably be standing room only in the council chamber that night. Holzapfel named Severance Integrity Award winner. Retired Macon County Sheriff Harold Lee Holzapfel has been selected for the 2015 Penny Severance Integrity Award. He will receive the honor, sponsored by the Macon County Jefferson Jackson Club in association with the Macon County Democratic Central Committee, at a reception from 6 to 8 p.m. October 1st in the Scoville Golf Course Banquet Center at 3909 West Main Street in Decatur. After a military career in the U.S. Navy spanning from 1956 to 64, Mr. Holzapfel had a distinguished 34-year career with the Macon County Sheriff's Department. Appointed as deputy sheriff in 1964, he promoted to sergeant in 1966, lieutenant in 1969, captain in 75, and was sworn in as sheriff in December 1986, holding that office until retirement in December of 1998. Sheriff Holzapfel was the first Macon County sheriff to attend and graduate from the FBI National Academy in Quantico, Virginia. In addition to attending law enforcement training in Virginia, he attended supervision of police personnel training at Northwestern University, law enforcement training at Richland Community College, and training for positive image building for law enforcement officers, National Symposium on Urban Police Patrol Practices, Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, Police Firearms Instructor, Hostage Negotiator, Civil Disorder Training, Law Enforcement Photography, Psychological Profiling, and Radiological Monitoring. The Severance Integrity Award is named in honor of the late Senator Penny Severance. It is presented to elected officials at the local, state, or federal level who embody the dedication, honesty, and integrity demonstrated by Severance in her career. Maurice Doyle, president of the Jefferson Jackson Club, said, "As someone who has known Lee Holzapfel since his appointment as deputy sheriff in 1964, we could not have chosen a better candidate for this award. In his tenure as sheriff, he was proud to have worked with Senator Severance to adopt legislation for the betterment of law enforcement." The reception will feature keynote speaker Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frericks, State Senator, and 2016 State Comptroller candidate Daniel Biss, State Senator Andy Menar, and State Representative Sue Shearer, along with additional local speakers. Anyone interested in attending should contact Jim Underwood via email at MaconCountyChairman@hotmail.com or by phone at 433-8632. Decatur Police Officer Robin Vogel Memorial 5K, October 3rd. The second annual Officer Robin Vogel Memorial 5K will be held on October 3rd at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Beach House, 2301 South Lakeshore Drive in Decatur. This event is being held to honor and remember fallen Decatur Police Department Officer Robin Vogel, who was struck by a drunk driver on October 1st, 2005 and passed away 2 days later on October 3rd from her injuries. Cost will be $25. To register for the race, go online at itsracetime.com and search for Officer Robin Vogel 5K and click the registration icon. Registration forms will be available at Kids and Fitness, Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Decatur Police Department. Race day registration will also be available. Money raised from this event will be put towards the Robin Vogel Memorial Scholarship that will be awarded to one high school senior in the Decatur-Macon County area. A portion of the money raised will also be donated to the National Law Enforcement Fallen Officer Fund in Washington, D.C. And from the columns page, it says, Groveland victims still seek justice. It was the road sign that made it real. Josh Vinkartaraman was returning to the University of Florida, where he is a senior, from Orlando earlier this year, when he saw it. Groveland, it said. He had read what happened there in Gilbert King's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Devil in the Grove, for class a few years before, and it touched me. But seeing that sign did more, bringing home to him that Groveland was a real, intangible place, or a real, intangible atrocity unfolded beginning in 1949. That, he says, was when he knew I really wanted to get involved and change history, essentially. So Vinkartaraman, who is a high school student, won a Silver Knight, a service award given by the Miami Herald and El Nuevo Herald, sought out Carol Greenlee, a 65-year-old consultant in Nashville. Her father, Charles Greenlee, was the last of the so-called Groveland Four. He died in 2012. She admits she was skeptical of this 21-year-old kid and questioned him closely. But when Vinkartaraman asked for her support in mounting a petition drive on behalf of her father and the other men, she gave it. "I'm in the mode of trying to get my father exonerated," she explains, "and I need all the help I can get." The two of them wanted one thing from you, your name on their petition. It's at www.change.org/p/richard-scott-exonerate-the-groveland-4. King details in his book how a young white woman named Norma Lee Paget concocted a tale of gang rape by four black men. A doctor's exam turned up no evidence of sexual assault. Neighbors who saw Paget right after the alleged attack said she was neither disheveled nor panicked. They scoffed at the idea she was raped, but refused to testify for the defense. In Klan-infested post-war Florida, Paget's flimsy claim was enough for police to essentially start rounding up black men en masse. Walter Irvin, Samuel Shepard, Ernest Thomas, and Charles Greenlee. The men didn't all know each other. No forensic evidence tied them to the crime, but again, this was Florida in 1949. Before it was over, a white mob would rampage through an African-American community. One man would be killed trying to escape. Three would be beaten and tortured. The sheriff would summarily execute one man, and the remaining two would be convicted. Carol, born shortly after her father's arrest, says she grew up feeling a cloud over the Greenlee name. When she was young, her mother used to take her to visit him weekly until he couldn't take it to see me anymore and told my mother not to ever bring me back there again. She didn't see him until he was paroled, and she was 11 by then. Here's why this matters. Some people like to pretend the world sprang into existence yesterday. In an era of mass incarceration and epidemic police misbehavior, they earnestly wonder why African Americans often don't trust law enforcement. Here, then, is an instructive reminder. Past tapping present on the shoulder. Justice denied for 66 years and counting. You still have innocent people, says Carol Greenlee, innocent black men every day being rejected, being dejected, and being put in prison for things they have not done. So we've got to find a way to correct the injustice that a group of people have been experiencing for years. I'm 65 years old, and I'm still looking for justice for my father, who was wrongfully imprisoned for something he didn't do and really didn't happen. Why don't you correct that? And this is from Dr. Roach's column, and the question is, Dear Dr. Roach, there are pros and cons to prostate screening. Dear Dr. Roach, your recent discussion on prostate cancer screening appears to bear out my belief that neither statistical evidence nor anecdotal evidence can be ignored in proving or disproving a case for screening. I am a 93-year-old who is 17 years post-op, having had a radical prostatectomy in 1998. My PSA had been 2.4 for at least a dozen years before it doubled in a year. A biopsy revealed cancer cells and a Gleason score of 5. I decided I did not want anything malignant in my body, statistics or not. During the surgery, it was discovered that the seminal vesicles were involved, and the pathology exam upped the Gleason to 9. Postoperative radiation was prescribed, and I underwent 36 sessions. I did lose sexual function, but experienced very little incontinence or other problems, and have been able to enjoy an active and happy life. A very good bargain, I would say. I have annual examinations, including PSA tests. Answer. You're quite right that it's impossible at the individual level to prove the benefit of screening. At the population level, most authorities who have looked at the data dispassionately have concluded there is no large net to benefit nor harm. For this reason, there are conflicting guidelines. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force has stated that the harms likely outweigh the benefits, and it recommends against screening. But screening remains the choice of the individual, best made with a provider who has reviewed that person's individual risks and fears. At age 76, you normally would not have been recommended for screening, and since you have thankfully exceeded your life expectancy at that time, it shows another limitation to guidelines on screening. I have found your experience after receiving the diagnosis of prostate cancer the norm. Nobody likes the idea of a cancer inside slowly growing, and even if there might be increased risks of removing it compared with leaving it there, most men want to remove it. In your case, given the findings of surgery, it does appear you may have been one of the lucky ones who had significant prolongation of life from treatment, and the final vote on whether you made the right decision is yours. Microwave issues. Dear Dr. Roach, I read that microwaving food can cause the food to lose nutritional value or even to become carcinogenic. Is this true? Answer, not really. Heating food does cause some nutrients such as vitamin C to break down. But microwaves don't do that much more and do that more than any other cooking method does. In general, the longer a food is kept very hot, the more nutrients are lost. So quick heating keeps in most of the nutrients. Quickly steaming is another way. That's essentially what a microwave does, since it heats water molecules very efficiently. Steaming the water contained in food or that you use to rinse it. In fact, microwaving may be better than boiling, since many nutrients can be lost in the water if you just throw it out. As far as carcinogens, which are cancer-causing chemicals, go, these are products of a very high heat, especially grilling meat. Because microwaves can heat unevenly, some areas of the food can get very hot while others stay cold. That's why it's best when microwaving to cook for a short time and allow the heat to distribute itself before heating further or serving. And this is a question for another columnist, Mary Hunt, for the Herald and Review. Questions about down comforters and inexpensive vacuums. Dear Mary, I don't know if you've ever written anything about down comforters, but I am looking for one that is machine washable, not too expensive, and can be used year-round and has lots of loft. Dear Jackie, the first thing you know is how to rate down. Down is the layer of fine feathers found under the tougher exterior feathers of ducks or geese. It's the good stuff. A down-filled comforter is, not surprisingly, filled with down and quite luxurious. Down is a very lightweight insulator against cold and also against heat. It is a natural wonder and makes for a fantastic blanket year-round. Some down comforters are filled with a combination of down and feathers, while others are only feathers, which can be stiff and pokey, all but less expensive because they are of a lower quality. Then comes a new version known as down alternative comforters. These are filled with polyester and have no down or feathers in them at all. And as you would expect, the prices of these alternative models are considerably less. Make sure you keep your eyes open for that word alternative. Given your requirements, I recommend that you go for a true down comforter that is duck down filled. Provided you stick with real down, a comforter with up to 750 fill power, this refers to the amount of down inside the comforter, will be wonderful year-round as it will be lightweight, keeping you cool in the summer and warm in the winter. Last, you should pay attention to the quality and thread count of the comforter's cover. This should be 100% cotton for its breathability, and the fact that cotton launders well, with at least a 200 thread count to assure a soft and inviting touch. As for being machine washable, all down comforters that are made with cotton covers are washable, provided you follow the steps to do this correctly. Given all this information, I don't think you could go wrong with comforters by Royal Hotel. For example, as I write this column, you can get Royal Hotel's very best queen-size Siberian Goose down comforter online with 100% Egyptian cotton, 500 thread count cover, and 750 fill power in solid white for less than $200. This is a comforter that, when cared for well and always kept in a duvet cover, will last a lifetime. Another option would be the comforter from the Pacific Coast Company, made in the USA with imported materials. By way of comparison, as I write, a Pacific Coast queen-size comforter filled with Pyrenees down, 650 fill power in a 420 count Egyptian cotton cover is the very same price as the Royal Hotel comforter mentioned above, about $200. There's no doubt that a good down comforter is a luxury. However, if you make a wise purchase and care for it diligently, you never have to replace it. And that's what will make it a very smart purchase. Now that you know what to look for, give yourself time to find just the right comforter. You might even find it on sale. Then treat it with all of the respect and care you would give any highly valued possession. Vacuum recommendation. Dear Mary, I have read a couple of times about your love for Shark Navigator Pro Lift-Away Vacuum. My home has all bare surface flooring. Is it just as good for these kinds of floors as for carpet, or do you recommend another vacuum? Dear Shirley, my Sharp Navigator Liftaway Pro is like Houdini. It transfers itself from a vacuum for carpet to one for drapes, stairs, and also hard surface floors like magic. The hard surface floor attachment uses a microfiber pad that takes care of even the smallest dust particles. I just love that feature. Given that the machine has anti-allergen HEPA technology, I think you and your floors will be very happy with it. You can just leave it in hard surface mode, knowing that should you opt for area rugs in the future, you will be all set. And we're going to stop here, even though it's a little early, and I will have something special for you following. This is the conclusion of the readings for Decatur for Tuesday, the 29th of September.